We're back with spread 401. Now, just a quick review. In spread 101, we talk about the basics of the spread, the conceits, the concepts, all the things that go into a very broad overview of a spread offense. Then we got into the tight end, the importance of having a tight end, and what kind of tight end you might want if you have a mobile quarterback or more of a traditional passing quarterback. Then we talked about the supremacy of the outside receiver and being a force multiplier out there and what that means. Now what we're going to do is we're going to talk about how the spread works when you don't have space. So what happens when we get into the red zone with a spread type offense? Now, this has been a challenge in the past for Sark's offenses, certainly at Texas. Ian, what would you say are some of the key tenets of a spread 401, that is to say within the goal line area, that we need to look for?
Yeah, Sark has not even really been necessarily a spread guy the last couple of years, but I think he'll be much more so next year. But he used some of the same tricks of creating space and run pass conflict, and that just doesn't happen in the red zone because there is no space to put people in run pass conflict. And the defender, as we'll get to, they can walk and chew gum at the same time, basically.
Right.
So basically, every spread offense needs solutions for that. You can build a spread offense with just a few key pieces and be good between the 20s at just about any school in the country, at almost any level. But then you need the answer for what happens when you get close.
And one of those tricks, those conflicts that you're talking about here, Ian, is specifically to do with the RPO, which is the run pass option. You're giving your quarterback, you're minimizing in many ways what the quarterback has to read in order to make a decision, but you're also challenging the defense to have to account for more of what the offense could be doing. So it is that juxtaposition that creates that conflict. But as you said, once we get into a tighter area, those issues become a lot easier for a defense to handle. But let's just touch base with what a normal RPO might look like. And again, we're going to go to some Ian Boyd art here. So walk us through what we've got here in our left to right reading as we do in the English language diagram of football.
Yeah, always real simple, these things, right? Yeah. What I drew here is an ISO play where the offense is inserting the Y tight end up the middle to lead block for the running back, which creates an extra gap inside. So you have six blockers. They're moving where the gaps are. So there are seven gaps. And then there are six defenders up front, the defensive ends, the defensive tackles, and then the Mike and the Will linebacker. The game becomes the defense tries to sneak an extra defender or two into the box to stop the run. But then the offense has the quarterback hold the ball out for the running back and then watch and see which defenders try to sneak into the box. If the nickel on the bottom, who's in a box, if he tries to get into the box, there's a perimeter screen to the Z receiver on the bottom, and the defense will be outnumbered, out in space, and the quarterback can just turn, flip the short perimeter pass, and that Z receiver has all this space, right? On the top, he has the X receiver running a glance route. So he works to get inside the corner and basically runs into the space that the safety, the money sign safety, would occupy. So if that safety drops down into the box to give the defense a numbers advantage there, the quarterback can pull it, throw it over his head. Both of those passes, it used to be like when teams first started doing RPOs, defenses would let them throw some of those. They'd be like, yeah, sure, throw it. You're not going to hit that. And then they would hit it. And it was so damaging, the defenses were like, okay, we can't let him throw it. We're going to have to figure out how to stop the run shorthanded, or we're going to have to confuse the quarterback somehow. They've gotten a lot better at that, but it's very complicated to do. It's very difficult. It requires high-level discipline, defensive scheming to get that done. So the RPO basically gives the offense chances to create easy, explosive plays and put defenders in no-win situations where you're always giving the ball to your best players in space and an advantage.
Well, okay. So this is space. So we're going to look at this and consider this somewhere between the 20s, right? So we've got a lot of real estate to play with.
Yeah.
Let's look at this now when our space has been very truncated. So we are now at the goal line.
Yep.
Talk to us a little bit about this. So again, if for those of you that are paying attention, this may look incredibly similar to the diagram that we just saw.
It should.
With the exception of maybe what that Z receiver is doing, our HVAC. But let's get into this a little bit. What happens when we've got a smaller amount of space to deal with and we're trying to run our RPOs?
Well, let's start on the top. That strong safety can realistically hang back.
Right.
And the distance to the box is a little shorter. So he can hang back longer, wait a beat for the quarterback to commit to handing or throwing, and then run and arrive in the box and potentially get there in time to make the tackle.
Hmm.
On the bottom, it's probably even worse. The nickel could do that, but the nickel could also just run into the box and the free safety can just get up real close. And so you throw the quick screen and the free safety, the F, is right there.
Right.
He's no longer playing backed off because his incentives have changed, right? If you're in between the 20s, it's like, hey, if it takes you a minute to come down and make a tackle against the screen, whatever. We'll live to fight another day. There's no more day to live to fight for when you're on the goal line. It's either make the play or not. And so the defense plays you differently. That can create opportunities, obviously. If they overplay, if they miss, then you score. But they're going to pressure you a lot more. And if you don't have answers for that, then things can dry up in a spectacular fashion. Texas fans know what that looks like.
And the safeties here are ostensibly using the back of the goal line here as additional coverage. They know that there's that depth is giving them the advantage of what they don't have to cover. So what is the solution here, Ian? How do we overcome this challenge? Because it has been a challenge up until this point.
I've seen like three main answers that teams have for how to push the ball in condensed space. One answer that's very good, if you can do it well, is to use traditional football.
That means big people?
Your big people. You have a jumbo package or you have just an I formation, but it may as well be jumbo, the biggest people you have, right? The best examples I've ever seen of this, Texas and rivals Oklahoma both had very passing-oriented spread offenses. They would just absolutely chew people up between the 20s, but neither of them were necessarily that good at running the ball. But they both had jumbo solutions for short yardage. For Texas, they would play like extra linemen. They put defensive tackles at fullback, and then they would put Cody Johnson. I'm thinking 2008, 2009 Texas.
Yeah.
They had a running back named Cody Johnson who was like 245 pounds. And Colt McCoy would get in the I formation and turn it, hand it off to Cody Johnson from the I formation with like Derek Lokey or Roy Miller or Lamar Houston lead blocking and just hammer it in. We saw Texas try that with Sark in 2023 and it be a little more hit or miss. When Texas was doing it in 2008, 2009, they were very good at it. Oklahoma had a really good one too. I'll get into that maybe in some of our other solutions because it was a little more, they had a little more going for it. But that's always an option is you maintain a little bit of traditional smash mouth football from old school formations in your playbook and you give them the time and attention they need and the personnel that they need to work. Playing defenders on offense is a good way to do that, right? Because then it's like, well, we'd love to get downhill and smash people, but we don't have fullbacks anymore. That's not something we do. But if you have a package where you just like, hey, we have defenders that we're going to use in these situations. So now we have super plus sized fullbacks, then it works.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about that Oklahoma solution that you mentioned. But before we do, let's hear from our sponsor. Hi, I want to tell you about Laura Baker. If you're looking for a new home in the 512 or even at this point, let's face it, 737 area code, there's only one number to call. That's Laura Baker at 512-784-0505. As a member of the elite Andy Allen team with Keller Williams, Laura has helped Longhorns find the home of their dreams in Central Texas. Just ask our resident sex symbol, Ian Boyd, who moved all the way from Michigan to Texas with Laura's help. Laura can help you find what you're looking for in the 512, the 737, or even parts of the 254 and the 210. Just, you know, give her a call at 512-784-0505. Her email is in the description as well as the rest of her contact details. She's a friend. Give her a call. Okay, am I to understand this correctly, Ian, that we are going to use Oklahoma football as a positive and not necessarily a pejorative? Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? You know, you understand that, like, people are going to see this.
Yeah, that's right. I have some Texas examples, too, but honestly, this Oklahoma version of it was one of the best I've seen ever, which is they had something that was a mix between the jumbo package and just having a dual-threat quarterback. They had a package that everybody older than, I don't know, 20 will remember, called the Belldozer.
Right, yeah.
Quarterback Blake Bell at quarterback. And I think they would get a little jumbo too, but it didn't matter. They could do a million different things with it. And he was like 6'4", 240. He ended up converting to tight end, and he might still be on the roster of the Kansas City Chiefs as a tight end. So they would just direct snap it to him, and then he would run one of like two or three quarterback run plays they had. And when you run the quarterback like that, you regain an advantage because you can create an extra gap with the running back that the defense normally doesn't have to account for. They normally don't have to account for the quarterback in the run, and they don't have to account for the running back as a blocker. So if you have the running back and the tight end blocking, for instance, now you can create – you have seven blockers instead of six, and you can create eight gaps instead of seven, right? So it's just simple math and physics. And then if the guy who's running the ball in at the end of it, the tip of the spear guy, is 6'4", 240, then it just works pretty well.
So right now the solutions seem to be, at least up to this point, getting really, really big. Now, you talked a little bit about the quarterback running the ball. What happens when you have a proper dual threat quarterback?
It makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, all right.
Either, yeah. Texas did the same thing as the Belldozer with the 18-wheeler with Tyrone Swoops.
Sure.
It wasn't quite as good, but it was actually still – I mean, it was pretty good. He scored a lot of touchdowns. They had an awesome version with Sam Ehlinger because they didn't have to sub anybody in. They could run Belldozer type power sets from their same offense, same guys that were running the RPO on first and 10 from the 30. They could just move a couple people around and run a Belldozer type thing to Ehlinger on first and goal from the 5. So that was very good. It had some trade-offs. Texas fans will remember when you use your quarterback as a battering ram and that's your main solution for everything. It's very efficient, but you might lose something like when you're back between the 20s and you want him to stretch the field and he has got a bone bruise in his leg and his rotator cuff is hanging on a thread or whatever. So there's that. Having just a normal dual threat quarterback and running some zone read or option stuff is very effective because you can create just a little bit of hesitation and a little bit of a numbers or angles advantage for your running back. I think that's what we're hoping to see with Texas and Arch Manning in 2025 is maybe Arch Manning will do some Belldozer type stuff every now and then, but just having the option of him being able to keep the ball around the edge forces the defenses to just hesitate and hold just a little bit. And sometimes that's all you need for your running back to find some daylight and just kind of plunge the ball through across the goal line.
So in our third solution, do you want to go to this next artistic piece?
Hold that art for just one moment.
Oh, guys, a teaser.
Yeah. There's one other solution, which usually you need a kind of a dual threat quarterback to do it, but it's just takes things up another level, which is that if you are on the goal line and you're a spread team, and it's like, well, you can't spread them anymore, right? You're running out of space. Well, most teams still have another gear of spread, of spreadiness, as it were.
Right.
Which is where you just start spreading people even more. You just push the limits. The running back goes way over here. The tight end goes way over there. You start moving things around in very unorthodox or unbalanced sets.
This sounds very Mike Leachy to me.
Yeah, but he would just throw. You can still.
That's a fair point. Yeah.
Maintain some run. Do you have the touchdown play by chance that I sent in an additional email attachment to you?
A lot of people ask about the touchdown play. And frankly, they're asking why we don't run it more.
Right.
And we can talk about that. But this is the touchdown play.
We called this the touchdown play under Tom Herman. This was the one play they had for scoring on the goal line that didn't involve Sam Ehlinger having to run through people.
It's a limited number of touchdowns, yeah.
But it worked extremely well. It worked every time, 90% of the time.
Yeah.
What they would do, it was particularly good if they could use it at tempo. So like maybe Ehlinger would throw a pass to like Colin Johnson. Colin Johnson would get down the field. He'd get caught because he wasn't the fastest guy in the world, but he'd get way down the field. He'd get tackled at like the 6-yard line. And Texas would run to the goal line, line up as quickly as they could in this formation and run this play. And they scored all the time on it because defenses would have to line up really quick. It's an unbalanced formation with the tight end and all three receivers to the same side of the field, as well as the running back. So defenses would have to figure out, like, wait, where do I go? Where does the corner go? Who's in the box in this play? Who's out in space? And then they would run just like tight zone duo Tom Herman staple with a little quick bubble screen on the bottom. And if the edge outside of the Y tight end was left completely open, Ehlinger could also just keep it and just kind of dart around the edge. And because it was an unbalanced formation and because they would always run and race into it and try to run it really fast, they caught defenses just like with their pants down with it all the time. Because it's kind of hard to stop anyways. You have to know exactly where everybody is supposed to line up to even have a chance. And it's very effective. And there's really a whole world of plays like it where you line up people in unorthodox places. It's maybe an RPO, and you can just really catch people. Basically like two-point plays, two-point conversion plays, you know, where you want to draw up something a little special. It's possible if you're clever enough and you have good enough personnel to just draw up a ton of really good two-point plays and just always have some in your bag when you get to the goal line as a spread team.
So what I'm hearing, the solution seems to be we have a jumbo package, a dual threat quarterback, where things get a little wonky.
Yeah, you kind of need to pick a lane.
Right.
Like you can't have 100 two-point plays.
Sure.
And then also invest in a jumbo package. Here's right. Let's get to that last piece of art. This is one of the best short yardage plays I've ever seen. People may remember it as the play that West Virginia ran to beat Texas in 2018. They called it Horns Down. And you could see like Dana Holgorsen and the West Virginia staff were doing the Horns Down symbol. I won't do it because I'm a gentleman. Then they ran this play. And Tom Herman was obviously taken with it because he installed it and Texas ran it a couple times. But they would line the running back way on the bottom. You see the R. Behind maybe the biggest wide receiver and the tight end, and they get as far to the sideline as they possibly can. and then the running back is running a bubble screen behind those two guys. Then you take maybe your best slot receiver and you put him as inside as you can get where he's not too close to the box, and he's running like a slant or an option route. And then on the top, you have your best fade route guy, and he runs a fade. And then in the middle, the offensive line runs quarterback draw. So they pretend to pass that, and then they start running forward for the to block for the quarterback. And so the quarterback can just line up, and he needs to make decisions pretty fast. But it's like, okay, did they put enough defenders on the bottom to stop the bubble screen? But one time Texas ran it, and that it was like against TCU, and TCU didn't have enough guys down there. So he just threw that long screen to Roschon Johnson, and Roschon Johnson bulldozed his way to the end zone. Okay. Who did they line up on the slot receiver? In this instance, it's a middle linebacker. Is a middle linebacker going to be able to cover a slot on a quick, like, option slant type route? Probably right. Not. So then you just wait and you throw that open. Hey, is that strong safety? Can the corner cover the fade route? People don't really want to see you run the fade route, but if you got a guy that's really good at it, is that strong safety in position to help on that? Is he on position to help on the slot? And West Virginia lined up. Texas tried to cover up everything. And then West Virginia's quarterback ran quarterback draw at Will Greer. And he like gimped in with his bad knee and then went over and did horns down to the student section. I think you probably remember that. It's an amazing play because it's stressing you in extreme areas of the field all at the same time, right? You got all your skill players doing what they do best in different little compartmentalized sections of the field.
I think this is what I really like about approaching it this way is really understanding, because what you hear a lot of fans are saying, wow, this offense is really prolific. They march down the field, and then for whatever reason, certainly in the last couple of years, not last two, I would say, but prior to that, this has been a major challenge for Texas. They would, you know, they would get to the 20-yard line and things would really, really stall out. So I hope this helps to explain some of the reasons why that happens and also some of the solutions for that, some of the solutions that I hope you have witnessed and seen in the last two iterations of the Sark offense. Some of this is going to change, obviously, with having a player like Arch, who is undoubtedly a dual threat quarterback, whether he's employed that way or not, I think will be determined, but just simply the threat of that. There's enough tape of Arch running now to put a little bit of fear in some defenses to where maybe we don't need to run him that often. But let's
go ahead. Can I summarize it real quick for everybody?
Yeah.
So you run out of space, you run out of the ability to create run pass conflict, or it makes it a lot harder. So goal line red zone offense is about having some sort of feature to your offense where you can just power through and just go through people, either forcing the ball to a receiver that can get open in tight spaces, putting enough big bodies on the field to just blast a hole for the running back, using the quarterback to create that advantage, or getting really creative in trying to create little windows of space. But you have to have some way to overpower the defense. You can't use the run-pass conflict trick, the spacing trick, that spread teams and Sark both love. It has to be mano a mano, here's how we win, bull in the ring kind of deal.
This has been Spread 4 of 1. We've talked about basics of the spread, implementation of the tight end, the force multiplier that's on the outside. Now we've talked about how the spread works down below the 20s. But y'all, we are not done. We've got Spread 501 coming at you. But thank you so much for being here. Join us at InsideTexas.com. Ian has been writing about all this. There's articles that Ian has put together that go in further depth, even more than this. So please go there, check those out. We really appreciate you being here. Thanks so much.